Today is January the 10th, 2018. Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. This is the original personal computer radio show of all things computing. I'm Hank Key and my colleague is Joe King. Podcasts of the program is available on wbai.org/archive, A-R-C-H-I-V-E, also on prn.fm, and on our website pcradioshow.org. We are on WBAI-FM 99.5 on the radio, and PRN.FM is on the internet each Wednesday with essentially the same program, except when WBAI is in a membership drive, the programs are slightly different. In lieu of live listening of programs on the radio, many have turned their ears and their attention to streaming radio broadcast. What is streaming broadcast? It is a one-way audio transmission over a data network. It is widely used to listen to audio clips and radio from the internet on computers, tablets, and smartphones. Regular AM and FM radio still brings in plenty of people. It accounts for 35% of the general population's listening on any given day. However, the medium is shifting now more to listening on a smartphone and other connected devices, which should come as no surprise to anyone. Based on correspondence we receive, there probably may be more people listening to the show on demand or podcast than the regular program over-the-air broadcast. So we're going to try to do something different. If you have a technical question or a statement you want to make, send us a brief description of what you want to talk about along with your name, telephone number, and the day and time of the day that we can call you. We would then in turn play back telephone recordings of general interest for airing on the Personal Computer Show. Because of the shift in scheduling of the program, we are no longer in the sweet spot in which listeners can easily call into the show while we're on the air. So if you're interested, you can contact us at hank@pcradioshow.org. A news alert. HP recalls 50,000 batteries. HP recalls these batteries from consumer notebooks after meltdowns are reported. HP has set up a dedicated site to see if a notebook is affected. They said this week that it's recalling about 50,000 consumer notebook batteries for free, which were originally sold as part of an HP notebook itself or as a standalone accessory. The company said it had received 8 reports of those batteries overheating, melting, or charring. Those reports included property damage and burns. HP said the laptops and batteries had been from December 2015 through December 2017. Although 50,000 of the affected batteries are sold within the United States, an additional 2,600 were sold within Canada. Among the incident reports were 3 reports of property damage, totaling $4,500, as well as one case where a customer suffered a first-degree burn on the hand. Fortunately, there is an easy way to tell if you've been affected. HP has set up the following web page for you to check if you've been affected. hp.com/go/battery program 2018. Let me repeat that. hp.com/go/battery program 2018, all one word, and check to see if your notebook or battery had been one of the 50,000 batteries that were affected. The kernel inside a chip is basically an invisible process that facilitates the way apps and functions work on your computer. It has complete control over your operating system. Analysts discovered that most computer processors have a design flaw, and these two alerts are known as Meltdown and Spectre. Meltdown goes after Intel processors, and Spectre takes down the Intel processor as well as ARM and AMD chips. The flaws combined affects virtually every modern computer, including smartphones, tablets, and PCs from all vendors, and running almost any operating system. Well, what's Meltdown and Spectre? In order to stay on top of complex tasks, we demand they have to think ahead, well, so to speak. It's called speculative execution. For example, if you load Facebook on a tab, Your computer can guess you want to enter your password, so it loads up your password file ahead of time before you enter in the data. What's important, though, that there is a war between your processor task and the other applications on your computer, and between your web browser and other things you're doing, or rather, they're supposed to be. And it turns out a flaw means there are cracks in that war. The cracks between processor and applications have been dubbed Meltdown. The cracks in the war between applications is called Spectra. Meltdown is an exploit that affects Intel CPUs that goes back to 2011. It affects most Intel processors, and Spectra affects almost all Intel and other processors, including AMD and ARM. Intel and ARM insisted that the issue is not a design flaw, although it will require users to download a patch and update their operating system to fix it. The good news is that Spectra and Meltdown are really very complex and very difficult to exploit, but since it's there, they want to fix it. Fixing Meltdown is easy, or it should be, and is probably the most urgent, but it affects your computer's speculative execution, meaning that it may slow down to some degree depending on the device and the function, but in most cases it deals with password. By the way, I just want to mention that the best way of avoiding a Meltdown vulnerability is do not save and store the password. In other words, when you enter a password, you're often asked, do you want this to be remembered? Well, say no, and you make it a habit of remembering what the password, so you're probably better off, and it's safer that way to keep it that way. However, it does not affect the Itanium server chips and the Atom processors before 2013. There is a slowdown, as it has affected many of the games. May be affected, so check on that first. It's also reported that although AMD does not have a problem with Meltdown, but because Microsoft is making patches to it, unfortunately, there's been reports where certain AMD processors, many of the older ones, when they are trying to execute that procedure with the patches that Microsoft has given, has locked up the system. If you happen to have an AMD processor, if there is a patch coming down from Microsoft to fix Meltdown, hold off on it. The Spectra flaw affects most modern processors by virtually all manufacturers, including Intel, AMD, and all the different ARM manufacturers, and it potentially allows hackers to trick otherwise error-free applications into giving up secret information. Spectra is harder for hackers to take advantage of, but it's also much harder to fix, and it's going to take time to get it fixed. ARM chips are a little less likely to be vulnerable, although it can be affecting Android phones, and AMD are saying that their chips are not vulnerable to attack, but researchers are saying otherwise, and I would probably take the word of the researchers. So if it's a chip ROM, then Intel needs to fix it. Yes and no. While Intel will surely address the problem in future chips, the fix for PC in the wild needs to come from the operating system manufacturers, as microcode update won't be able to properly repair the processor. Though it depends on how the final patches for the Intel CPU kernel bug vulnerability are implemented. Operating system makers could code in exceptions for AMD processors, and they should. Microsoft has already announced that they have released a security update. Microsoft warns that this update may cause certain performance problems. That's their disclaimer, but so far, of the updates that's been made, it's been negligible, except for games. Google has confirmed that the latest Android security update from January 2nd has already solved the problem, and they're also working on a solution that will be implemented on their Chrome 64 and Chrome OS operating system. If you are a Mac user, the next Mac update, 10.12.2, should solve the problem. The Apple iPhone battery price has been reduced to $29, down from their regular price of $79, as part of Apple's apology over a lack of communications about the power management changes it made, starting in iOS 10.2.1. The discount is effective immediately and available until the end of 2018. However, I can tell you that based on a lot of the reports, don't wait till December 2018 to get it, okay? What you're saying is that in the initial testing, you don't need the battery now, and you may want to hold off on it for a longer period of time so you have a fresh battery. I would start thinking about it in starting in September unless you have a problem. If the Apple Store Apple Authorized Service Provider has replacement batteries in stock, the process should be completed within hours, allowing you to walk out with your iPhone on the same day. An invoice will be provided for the $29 fee, plus any local taxes to be paid upon completion of replacement. However, what they have said is that if the battery is not in stock, they have to order it. I guess if it takes maybe an hour, 2 hours, and you have to wait for it to be replaced, I think most people can tolerate that. But if they were to say to you, we need to hold your phone for 2, 3, 4, 5 days, can you do without the phone? I don't know. I have a question here. If the iPhone 8 Plus is too big for you, or you can't live without a headphone jack, or the iPhone 8 Plus is too heavy and I don't need the iPhone 8's portrait mode as much as I expected, or I like having a home button that clicks, or I'd rather put the money in to repair the screen than spring for one of the latest phones. The iPhone 8 Plus is a fantastic phone, but you may just say it's not the phone for you. You may just want to upgrade the iPhone 6S and defer purchase of the iPhone 8 Plus or iPhone X. Think about that.
Hank, there's been a lot of discussion about batteries lately on cell phones, smartphones, and so on. A lot of people have said that iPhone, the Apple product, has been cheating in some way by lowering the speed towards the end of the battery life. The whole question really is, what would be the best way to provide a battery in this day and age? Batteries are really still rather primitive. My thoughts were a little bit different from everybody else. I used to have I think it was called a TAC one or a TAC phone for Motorola. It was a flip phone, folded down into a very small package that fit in my breast pocket. And it had, of course, a battery that you could take out and replace. And indeed, I had early replaced it with something that was developed by a third party. It was a super long-lasting battery. It didn't really add significantly to the weight, but it made the phone a lot more practical for me. Recently, it's become very popular to sell phones without an interchangeable battery or without a battery that the end user could change, at least. My previous phone was a Galaxy, and it had an interchangeable battery, and I had an extra battery in my pocket at all times. It practically weighed nothing. But you remember when the new Galaxy came out, the battery started exploding and everybody got hysterical. It was not an interchangeable battery. It was a built-in battery. So what's the reason behind all of this? In order to save a fraction of a millimeter and a fraction of an ounce and a fraction of a dollar, the companies have started using non-usable replaceable batteries. Have to go back to the factory to replace the battery. Or in some cases, if you're willing to violate your warranty, you can have a local shop replace it. I've never gone for that. I would rather buy a phone with a replaceable battery. I just got a phone last year. It was put out by Google, of all people, and it was called the Pixel. And it was the latest and greatest. It had the best camera and the most amazing sound. And it looked gorgeous. And it didn't have a replaceable battery, but I wanted it because it was the latest and greatest. That's the last time I'll ever make that mistake. I could have gone to Motorola. They were still making phones with interchangeable batteries. I don't know if they still are today. Hank, maybe you know that for me. But if I had an interchangeable battery, when we got towards the end of the battery's life, all I would have to do is open the back, pull it out, put in another $30 or $40 battery, and go on my way. If I was going out in the field and I was going to be using the battery heavily, like I am right now with this recording, no problem. I could have one, two, even three batteries in my pocket, and it wouldn't add any significant weight. So why did all the companies start doing this built-in battery? Well, you'd have to ask Apple. They started it, and everybody knows anything that Apple does is bigger and better and more futuristic, and so we better follow what they're doing because we sure don't know what we're doing. That sounds ridiculous, but that's really the way it is. Android tried to make up for it by giving me all sorts of choices on how to save battery life. I could turn off the Wi-Fi. I could turn off the cell phone. I could turn off the screen. I could turn off the background. Why not just give me the option of putting in another battery? That's just one man's opinion.
This week was the beginning of CES, and we have Dr. Alfred Poor on site reporting on what's new, what's the greatest, and what's happening in Las Vegas. How's the weather in Las Vegas?
It sucks.
Really?
It is pouring rain. It's biblical. It's crazy. And so I did not get here Sunday. I didn't get here till yesterday morning. Mm-hmm. But I still got to go to one special private event for the press by a delegation of Chinese technology companies, which was kind of interesting. And then I had a meeting with Samsung and mobile health technology, which is products for aging in place and to help seniors and personal, you know, emergency response systems, things like that. And then last night was a show called Digital Experience by Capcom, which again is a press-only event. And that's huge. They had, well, I don't know, maybe 100 exhibitors there. And saw a lot of really cool things there as well. So, and that's just getting started. Then the exhibit hall's open today. I've got a breakfast meeting, then the exhibit hall's open today, and it's half-hour sessions all day long, and then same thing tomorrow. So, busy schedule.
Do you see any progress and technical developments as opposed to all the hype that I've been hearing for the past year and I'm still waiting?
Well, yes. I mean, a lot of the products that I've seen 2 years ago and a year ago, they're shipping now. And there's a lot of really interesting innovation going on and new approaches. One of the biggest areas, at least, you know, from my area of interest with wearables and mobile technology for health and medical applications, one of the biggest areas is the whole thing about hearing. There's a new category called hearables, and it's really sort of over-the-counter hearing for people with hearing impairment. So rather than go and spend $4,000 per unit from, you know, a doctor, an audiologist, and for your hearing aids, they're now simpler devices that only cost a few hundred dollars that can help a lot with people's hearing impairment. And then there's products in the middle that can also, you know, there's sort of the retail kind of hearing aids, but you don't, they don't cost nearly as much. One of the outfits that I saw that I was really interested in, the company called Eargo, and they sort of fall in the middle. They're tiny hearing aids that go into your ear canal, so they disappear. But unlike the most hearing aids, most hearing aids are behind the ear. They have all the batteries, electronics back there, and they have tiny little batteries that you have to be able to change. Well, Eargo they've been on the market for over a year, and they have these tiny little things that you just insert in your ear canal. But the cool thing about them is when you take them out, you put them in this little carrying case, and it recharges them. And so you get 16 hours of use on a full charge, which means, you know, full day for most people. And there's no fumbling with the tiny little batteries or anything like that. They just it's a wirelessly recharging thing when you put them in their case, which is really kind of cool.
Well, what I found was that in talking to Joe King, who has a really high-end hearing aid device, is that when he uses it, it somehow interferes with cell phone calls.
That's quite possible. You know, there's so much wireless interference, you know, waves going on. I can imagine that some aren't as well shielded as others, and it could be a problem. There was another hearing product. Let me see if I can find my notes on this one quick. That I thought was kind of interesting. Hang on. Yeah, it's a company called Even, E-V-E-N. And there's a much lower end kind of solution, but it's pretty sophisticated. Instead of being in the ear, kind of hearing aids kind of thing, these are over the ear, earphones that you would wear, like listening to music or television or things like that. But the interesting thing about it is that they have an audio test built right into them. And you push a button, and the audio test plays different music samples. And when you can begin to hear that music, you push a button, and it will automatically diagnose your hearing loss and adjust the music, the sound to match your responses to the audio test. And they, it's crazy that they have a corded version that you would plug into your TV or your smartphone or whatever you're listening to. But then they have another version that's Bluetooth, wireless connected. And the prices on these things is crazy. It's $150 for the corded version, and it's $230 for the Bluetooth version. So, you know, compared to expensive hearing aids, this is something that tuned. They have 8 different frequency bands that they tune it to for each year. So it's really customized, but it's something you do by yourself, for yourself, just over the counter. So there's a lot of good stuff going on just in the hearing products.
One of the problems I find when I go to press conferences is that more than half of the products are in crowdfunding or kickstart mode, as opposed to how many are actually in production and you could actually get it, in the consumer market.
Yeah, it continues to be a problem. But again, there are products that I've been following, and you know, there's certainly a lot of them that are in Kickstarter or Indiegogo programs. But a lot of these also are really getting, they're real. They're available. For example, Motive is a company that some of the listeners may have heard of. A lot of people are familiar with Fitbit and the other fitness kinds of wristbands that you can wear. Well, Motive is actually a smart ring that you would wear on your finger, but it does all the kinds of things that a fitness band would do. Checks your heart rate, tracks your active time, checks your sleep activity, works 24/7, round the clock. And they've improved their algorithm so that they can get better insights from the data that you get from it. This thing runs, it's tiny, right? It's like the size of a wedding ring. Yet it runs for 3.5 days on a charge.
That's very good.
And it's awesome compared to a lot of these wristbands. And, it pairs up with your smartphone and all that. Now, this is a product that's been shipping since last September. So, this is a real product. It's out there.
I've been talking to a lot of people, and one of the questions that I get quite often is, are there any products where seniors who are living alone, where there are sensors, devices that can keep track to make sure that they're okay, or if there's something happens, they can, because most seniors don't like to wear that thing around their neck.
No, those things are called PERS, Personal Emergency Response System. And the fact is, They're really loud. The track record for them is not good. As you say, a lot of seniors, it's a badge of shame. You know, it's like pinning a note on the sweater of your kindergarten kid as you send them off to school. Seniors don't like to wear them, and people have tried to put lipstick on the pig by making them look like jewelry pendants or whatever, but it's still a pendant. The problem is, there are a whole bunch of problems with these things, but one of the big problems is most seniors won't even push the button when they need help. There's been lots of studies that followed seniors, and for those who found themselves in situations where they needed emergency assistance, you want to care, guess how many pushed the button?
25%?
How about 7%?
Wow, that's very little.
Less than 1 in 10. But if you think about it, there's a lot of good reasons why they feel this way. For example, they did something stupid. They're embarrassed. You know, they don't want somebody to find out that they were doing something that was a stupid thing to do. But they don't want to be a bother. And another one is, they don't want their adult children to find out because they're going to make them move out of their home and into some managed care facility.
Well, you had brought up something on a prior broadcast where instead of making it wearable, you have sensors that you can place in different parts of the room so you can sense movement or any kind of a problem or change in sound.
Right, and those things are coming. There's a number of products that exist already that are pretty nice. There's can't come up with the name of the product at the moment, but there's one that has a sensor that slumps under your mattress, and it measures your activity while you're sleeping, and it can measure the quality of sleep, and then obviously it can tell when you're in or out of bed. So this could be a really good way of tracking the behavior of a senior, and make sure that they're getting in bed and when they should be, and getting out of bed in the morning and not just staying in bed all day and that sort of thing. One of the big problems with that particular product, and many others though, is that it requires a smartphone as its link to the tracking, to caregivers, to family members, and so forth. And a lot of seniors aren't geared to working with a smartphone and keeping it running. I mean, if the smartphone runs into problems, if they need to do updates, that's going to be beyond the scope of most seniors. Fortunately, a lot of companies are now realizing that they need to have some sort of a base station, and I haven't yet found one that I think is perfect, but a lot of them are working towards this idea of having the ability to summon help immediately if you want it, but also to have this passive monitoring. So automatic fall detection, for example, is one of the key functions that's in there. There's one company that I've been tracking for a couple of years. It's called Vayer, V-A-Y-Y-E-R. And they created a radio frequency. They use radio waves. Originally, it was a device that they could look at tumors inside the body and do medical imaging for far less money, a much lower cost, but much better accuracy than some of the current medical imaging. And they realized that it had other applications as well. And so the first application they came up with was a little device that you can hold up against the wall, and it can actually look through the wall and find where you have pipes, where you have electrical wires, where the studs are, and things like that. And it can tell the difference between those things. I mean, it even can tell if you've got a mouse in the wall. But one of the things that's coming is they have a way of setting up one of these beacons in the home and being able to monitor for fall detection and activity and make sure that the person's moving. It's even sensitive enough at this point in its current stage that they can measure the breathing rate of the person in the room. So you can get some basic biometrics. That's a product that they expect to have out within the next 6 months.
I have a question for you. With all these devices, is there any regulation or standards? Because the problem I could see is that with these devices, if you want to get on a plane, you have to take it all off, or TSA will say it's okay, you can wear it. So when seniors want to travel, that's a big question.
Well, yeah. Well, this particular product that I'm talking about, the VIAR one, isn't something that you wear. You just set a box up in the room, plug it in, and you don't have to wear anything. You don't have to put anything on. You don't have to do anything. It just is. It just does it. There are other products like smartwatches and so forth that do have automatic fall detection, but also have an emergency response button. They have GPS signals in them so that they can locate the person if they're away from the home, which is important for seniors who are still traveling, like you're mentioning. But it's just a smartwatch. And so as far as regulations go, it's regulated no more or less than any timepiece that you might wear on your wrist. So that's not a big issue. When you get into situations where it's recording medical data, or it's being used to provide data that's going to be used for diagnosis or things like that, then you start getting into the FDA requirements and have to get certification for the FDA, which is a long road and an expensive one, can be expensive. But more and more companies are doing that because people want to know that it's a real product, that it actually does something useful, and that's not just some wild claims that the manufacturer makes without any support.
With the wearable hype on the wearable technology hype, it started, I think, with the Apple Watch. Has there been any increase in that area, or it's really fallen off and gone to different areas?
Well, all hype starts with Apple, so we'll begin with that assumption. And I think that Apple is a bit guilty of raising expectations too high. But the fact is that Apple really is not a very significant player in this whole market at this point. One of the big points that I make is that, and I think I did this on a segment in the show not so long ago, but the future of this market is where the money is. And the people, the organizations that are going to make this stuff happen and to put it on that wrists or the bodies or the whatever in the homes or whatever of people on a widespread basis, it's going to be the insurance company. It's going to be the big employers. It's going to be the healthcare system. In other words, those are the people who are going to financially benefit from having healthier people. Having a Fitbit is great if you go to the gym and stuff like that, but end of the month, you're not going to have any more money in your pocket just because you're wearing one of those fitness bands. But end of the month, if you're not sick, your employer is getting more productivity out of you. You're costing them less in healthcare. And so they have a real interest in helping you get healthy and stay healthy. And they're the ones who are going to end up funding a lot of these programs. And we're already seeing this, a number of instances where companies are buying like 10,000 fitness bands at a time to give to employees or to give to companies that they insure, that they provide health insurance for, things like that. So I think that's where the future's going.
One of the things I see that's happening is that the navigation with a lot of these devices are by symbols. Is there any standards developed for these symbols? Because I look at from one device to the other, and I have a hard time figuring out what do they mean.
Standards. So let's jump into the Wayback Machine for a moment, and let's go back to the early '80s when the IBM PC came out. Remember?
Yep.
And it was that big beige box.
Yep.
And the keyboard looked a certain way, and the floppy disks were of a certain size. They were 5 1/4 inch floppies.
Mm-hmm.
And then the IBM clones started to appear. And if you remember, it was the Wild West.
Yes.
We had different sized floppy disks. We had different plugs. We had different, everything. And it was just that crazy, expansive, frothy market that was innovating all over the place, but with very low standardization and a lot of duplicated effort. Well, that's what we're going through right now in this whole wearable and mobile health market. Lots of people doing lots of things, in many cases doing the same thing and not knowing it, and somebody else has already done it. And they each have their own little version of why their way is a better way. And so whether it's the user interface, and we're seeing all kinds of things on user interface, from gesture to speech to touch to, you know, there's just all kinds of things going on that people are experimenting with how we interact with these devices. But there are no standards yet. I don't think we're going to get them. I think what we're going to end up with is, just as with computers, we're going to end up with a small handful of companies that are the winners.
When you talk to these vendors, do you ask them how much effort or concerns they have to make it hacker-proof?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And the security, we didn't have the internet when we first built the PCs, and so there wasn't a threat of people hacking your computer back then because it wasn't connected to anything. And so I think the technology companies can be forgiven for not building in better security at that level. But there's no excuse this time around. Just the thing with the Maria hack happened last year, where the bots took over baby cams and refrigerators and all that, and were used for denial of service attacks and other things. There's no excuse for they're not being security baked in right at the chip level for these devices. What happened was people saw an opportunity. They wanted to get a product out the door fast. Yeah, good enough was good enough, and so security was never really considered for a lot of these things. And it's a shame, but we are beginning to see more concern about devices that have better security when they're connected to the internet. We're also seeing interesting devices that take a kind of a different take on this. I don't do a whole lot with the network security devices, but there are a number of companies that are coming out with sort of, I guess the way to put it is the guardian at the wall. It's something that you put between your internet connection and your home network. And it's an intelligent device that sits there and watches and can identify when something's not right, when traffic is going that shouldn't be there. So it's much more than a firewall. It's a device that's smart and can actually analyze the data transfers and realize when something is not right.
During the past Christmas holiday, the big item was Alexa. Is any of these devices voice actuated rather than trying to
They all are.
They all are.
Yeah, last year it was drones and VR. This year it's voice interface.
By the way, one of the things I did was that I had to put my Alexa device, I had to mute it so that it doesn't accidentally go on while we're talking.
Right. Yep. And there's a very interesting thing I learned recently about that. So sometimes early on, they had, whenever a commercial came on, it would activate people's echoes in their homes, the Alexa. And it turns out that instead of leaving a back door, Google has programmed in sort of a kill switch for the voice recognition. It turns out that they have created a narrow band of sound, and if it doesn't detect any sound in that narrow range of frequency, it ignores the voice command. And so what they do is they record the soundtrack of somebody saying, "Alexa, what time is it?" But then they go in and they take out, they silence this narrow band of frequencies. And then your echoes will ignore it when they hear it.
It's good to hear from you, and I hope the weather gets better.
Well, this is Vegas. It has to get better. But
no, you don't understand. when the weather's great, people want to go out. They, in Vegas, they want the people inside the casinos.
Right, they do. But, yeah, it is not Chamber of Commerce weather here in Vegas today.
I'll talk to you later.
All right, thanks
so much. Okay, thanks for calling.
Yep, bye-bye.
The Consumer Electronics Show, CES, is a destination for people who want to see the latest and supposedly the greatest in technology products. But Marty Winston did 4 months of homework on this year's show and got in touch with hundreds of companies. What do you get for the house that has everything, or for the guy who's designing and building it? Marty Winston reports on what both he and his project got for Christmas.
If I didn't say it yet, Happy New Year, everybody. My cybernetic house project got some great boosts recently, over the holidays especially, as my attention focused on its control rack. Now, the back of the rack, remember this has a front and a back because it's 40 inches deep. The back of the rack is now about half full. It has the dual WAN router, so we can have cable and fiber outside internet connections coming in. It has the gigabit switches for all six of our intranets. It has surge protectors on the 32 Ethernet lines that go to the PoE, Power over Ethernet, outdoor surveillance cameras. Surges there are not going to get into the rack. And the power distribution units for that are all in place. Up at the front of the rack, I finished the last of the rack's Raspberry Pi stacks. There's 37 Raspberry Pis on a shelf. Added some additional special purpose DC supplies for things like the Dolly lighting gateway. That's the distributed addressable lighting interface, or digital rather, addressable lighting interface. A two-wire interface that controls lights wherever they happen to be. I got in a hot air solder rework station. You know, some of those surface mount devices are so small, there's no room for the point of a solder gun in any way. All the connections are underneath. You have to literally just heat it up to the point that solder melts. And the way to do that is a hot air solder rework station. I got one. I got some tiny vacuum pickups, some of them smaller than your finger, for even tinier surface mount parts. I got solder flux, solder paste. That whole corner is now very, very well supplied and essentially complete. Speaking of things that help, one of the reviewables we got in is for the cat. It's a litter robot. It does an almost magical job of putting the clumps into a trash bag while distributing the clean, untouched litter evenly within what looks like a great big drum on top of a base. The drum rotates one way when the cat leaves, 20 minutes or so after the cat leaves, and it's got a really nice little resistive weight sensor, pressure sensor, to know when the cat's in and when the cat leaves. 20 minutes later, it has a motor rotate the inner drum to bring the whole litter into a space between the inner drum and the outer drum. It then reverses, and because of an open mesh kind of thing, the clumps go down to the trash bag. The clean litter comes back to the box. It overshoots its original position so it can come back and everything ends up level. Litter robot, absolutely one of my favorite new things. I got a new flying camera. It's terrific. It's got quadcopter to lift it up, but it's built to be a camera. It can orbit. It can follow its photo or video target. It can do all kinds of wonderful shooting. It's like having a boom bigger than I could afford to put out there and taking no space at all. The kids came in for the holidays. My daughter showed an interest in my Canon DSLR, so I gave it to her. And I bought myself a Nikon D3300. The 33, not the 34. 34 is a little newer, but the D3300 has the mic input I need, and the Canon doesn't have that, and the D3400 doesn't have that. So I can use it for video shooting with a direct mic input into it. And by the way, that 3300 is a sweeter camera. I just like it. Those cameras are important as I update our 40yearhouse.com site. You'll see new photos there. More videos will follow before long. Klein Tool sent a new way to terminate data cables using pass-through RJ45 plugs and a purpose-built crimper that also trims in the same stroke. So you take an inch and a half of the outer insulation out, you put the 8 wires inside into order, stick it in, it comes out the other end, you can reconfirm it's in the right order. You stick it in this tool, squeeze it down, it crimps it tight, it crimps it to the outer shell for strain relief, and it trims the ends off so nothing's sticking out the end when you're done. Nice little way to save a step in making a lot of terminations happen. My wife got me a terrific red fedora, very stylish, and she also restocked my Rocky Patel cigar supply, and my son bought me the biggest bottle of the Macallan I've ever owned. Oh yeah, it feels like it's going to be a really good year. Now, while all of this was happening, my inbox was groaning from all of the PR pitches coming in, not just because of CES, but also because of the Home Builder Show and the Kitchen and Bath Show and the Gun Industry SHOT Show and one other I won't mention in polite company. Also, a publishing group, a big one that has been around for a long time, talked to me about doing articles for magazines that cover microwaves and power electronics. And that should help me get connections with companies that can do other things to help the 40-year house, the cybernetic house. But all of that is just the sparkle. What's really thrilling me is what I learned about new things that are still in the future, some of them not until next year, but that really rock in their impact. For example, drive failures are really inconsistent with the concept of a house that's intended to be 40 years maintenance free. My usual way around that is to use a RAID 6 array as a main drive. RAID 6 can keep going even if two of the drives in the array go astray. Plus, I also include another backup unit, usually an external drive, that's at least RAID 1, which is mirroring. And so one drive fails there, we've still got the other one to keep the RAID alive. Now, I learned, and it will be several months before I'm allowed to tell you any more about this, but I learned about a major new development that will make RAID 6 more survivable than ever before. And that has me grinning. By the way, I'm giving a lot of attention to Thunderbolt 3 as a good high bandwidth backup path that doesn't use any network bandwidth. I'm trying to get in a Thunderbolt 3 PCIe adapter. Asus has one. I've asked them for one, or I'll go find one somewhere else. I want to report on this because it opens up a lot of elbow room for a lot of things that have to happen between the smarter machines, the more robust machines in our control architecture. I also learned about a new kind of flooring. Speaking of technology, this has a few technological assists. So it feels as warm and rich as true wood, but it could survive outdoors for a century without any detriment. Again, it'll be a few months before I can tell you more. I found, and this may seem to be an oxymoron, an outdoor-capable ceiling fan. And this is for ceilings over decks or porches. If it's only got screens, fine, you know, put this there. But outdoor has a different requirement than indoors because of the temperature, humidity variations there. This is an outdoor-capable ceiling fan that is designed differently than any one I have ever seen. It's very cool. It has a cylinder kind of around and a little bit underneath. The cylinder is beyond the reach of these somewhat shorter than usual fan blades. Because of that cylinder, the airflow is creating a bit more of a focus in the middle, which causes a greater spread through the room. So the airflow is excellent, but really cool. Outside that cylinder is like a fabric of LED lighting. So that cylindrical band is a big LED light fixture that provides light without that annoying flickering fan shadow. There are lots of new technology products getting disclosed at CES, but not available until later in the year, that may enhance our sensors for the house. I'm also in a direct conversation with one of the sensor houses about putting things together to fit our vision. And if they do that, I think you'll find more complete sensors available to OEMs everywhere, so smart houses can get just a little bit smarter without adding to complexity and without hurting reliability. We're finding multiple sources for image recognition so we can log the license plates of cars in the driveway using OCR on them, associate those with video of the driver, and also recognize logos, doing a three-space rotation of a stored graphic. So the automation can identify package delivery, pizza delivery, service calls, first responders, and so on. We'll do more cooperatively with local colleges this year. On that note, by the way, there's plenty of room for hardware people among you out there who are hands-on with electronics, or software people who are good at writing tight C++ code to play a part in the house project if you feel like it. Get in touch through the show if you're interested. Also, on the subject of the house, one of our tripping points has been about decisions on what wiring will run and how we'll identify it. We're now about two-thirds of the way through defining that, and a big part of the solution, as it turns out, is good old-fashioned telephone extension wiring cords, cables, that stuff that goes between the RJ11 modular connectors to hook the phone to the wall. Those cords and connectors have the four conductors, the fairly low capacitance, and the low cost that you might expect, and certainly things to mount their connectors are all over the place in volumes and quantities and at very reasonably low prices. So, overall, yeah, the holidays were good to me, good to the house project, and I hope really good to you, and that you were able to avoid problems by following Hank's advice to back up, back up, back up. Okay, Hank, may the backup be with you.
Thank you, Marty. Public service announcements of computer club meetings in the tri-state area. The New York Amateur Computer Club has its general meeting Thursday, January 11th at 7 p.m., and the topic of presentation is Using a Work Diary to Prevent Project Chaos. It will be held at NYU, 32 Waverly Place, Silver Building, Room 401 in Manhattan, New York. The Long Island Macintosh Users Group will have their meeting January the 12th. It's on a Friday, 7 p.m., at the New York Institute of Technology Old Westbury Campus, located at Northern Boulevard and Valentine's Lane, and it'll be held at the auditorium of the Harry J. Schurer Hall. The Princeton PC Users Group will have their meeting on Tuesday, January the 23rd at 7 p.m., and they'll be meeting at the Mercer County Library in Lawrenceville, New Jersey. The Brookdale Computer Users Group will have a presentation on Current Trends in Personal Technology. Thursday, January the 25th, meeting time is 6:45 p.m., and the meeting will be held at the Middletown Library Large Meeting Room at 55 New Monmouth Road, Middletown, New Jersey. Westchester PC Users Group will have a presentation on Bitcoin. Thursday, February the 1st, 7 p.m., Keller Williams Realty, located at 120 Bloomingdale Road, first floor in White Plains, New York. Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey will have their general meeting on Friday, February the 2nd, 8 p.m., at the Scotch Plains Rescue Squad at 1916 Bartle Avenue in Scotch Plains, New Jersey. Danbury Area Computer Society will have their meeting on Tuesday, February the 6th, at 7:30 p.m. at the Danbury Hospital Auditorium at Danbury, Connecticut. The Computer Learning Center of Ewing will have a presentation on backing up your computer, Tuesday, February the 6th. Meeting time is 1:30 p.m., and they're located at 999 Lower Ferry Road in Ewing, New Jersey. The website for the Personal Computer Show is pcradioshow.org. We can be heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on prn.fm on the Internet and at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on WBAI-FM 99.5 New York on the radio or WBAI.org streaming on the Internet. In the meantime, stay in touch and keep on computing and back up, back up, back up, and you have no excuses just because the weather's cold, you need to back up. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Joe King and Michael Horowitz, we thank you for listening. We wish everyone a happy new year. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station, next week.